I hate to tell you this, but it turns out that traditional bed sheets can harbor more bacteria than a toilet seat. I know, very disgusting. Not only is it extremely gross, but it also leads to acne, allergies, and stuffy noses. Miracle Made offers a whole line of self-cleaning, antibacterial bedding, such as sheets, pillowcases, and comforters that prevent up to 99.7% of bacteria growth and require up to 3 times less laundry. If you get hot at night, you'll appreciate Miracle Made's self-cooling properties, which makes use of silver-infused fabrics inspired by NASA. If it's good enough for the astronauts, it's good enough for me. They are thermoregulating and designed to keep you at the perfect temperature all night long. It makes a huge difference in getting better sleep every night. If you hate sleeping in bacteria, which I'm sure you do, or you're looking to get rid of your worn and uncomfortable bedding, you should check out Miracle Made. You'll feel like you're tucked into a luxurious hotel fancy bedding situation, but it'll be a lower cost than some of those other brands. Go to trymiracle.com/thestacks to try Miracle Made sheets for you or a lucky loved one. Order today and save over 40%. Plus, if you use our promo code THESTACKS at checkout, you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. Miracle is so confident in their product that it's backed by a 30-day money-back guarantee. If you aren't 100% satisfied, you will get a full refund. Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiraclemade.com/thestacks and use the code THESTACKS to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/thestacks to treat yourself. Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode. Hi, everybody, and welcome back to The Stacks. I am your host, Tracy Thomas. We're going to get started in just a moment, but before we do, I'm telling you about all the things we have going on here. First things first, we are doing our Stacks Tote giveaway. For anyone who goes to patreon.com/thestacks and contributes any amount, you are entered to win one of our Stacks Totes. They're super cute. You can see them on our Instagram at The Stacks Pod, or you can see them on our Patreon page, which is patreon.com/thestacks. Patreon allows independent creators such as The Stacks to keep their product going, to keep doing what they love doing, to keep making stuff that you enjoy listening to. So if you're in a place where you can contribute, now is an amazing time to do so because you're entered to win one of 3 totes. And also, if I feel like doing more totes, I just might. So if you're able to contribute, we would really, really appreciate it. That's patreon.com/thestacks. We have some new members that I want to give some love to who joined the Stacks Pack this week. Sarah Bernards, Hawa Jola, Jessica Gwynn, and Charlotte Zerna. So thank you all so much for contributing. And everyone else, you have until August 16th to join the fun. Also, I'm going to ask everybody who's listening right now to make sure that you're subscribed to the show wherever you're listening. And if you're listening through Apple Podcasts, please rate and review the show. The reviews go a really long way to helping us get the word out about the Stacks. Our most recent review comes from, I'm going to fuck this up, but I'm going to try, Idleotopia, and they say, this is an amazing podcast that will definitely be culpable for adding to your probably already long list of books to read. Prepare to listen to amazing people passionately discuss books. There's a lot of nonfiction books to discuss here, but be prepared for your love of Shakespeare to be reignited. So yeah, that review is amazing because it's all my favorite things, nonfiction and Shakespeare. Thank you so much for that review. And the rest of you, if you haven't done it yet, we would really, really appreciate a review. Okay, that's all the housekeeping. This week, our guest is Jay Connor. Jay is a writer. He is also the creator and co-host of the Extraordinary Negroes podcast. Jay is a super awesome guy. He's lived many lives. And this week, we talk about all the jobs Jay's had. We talk about being a writer, what it's like, who he's inspired by. And then, of course, we talk about all the books Jay loves. So listen to the show, enjoy, and remember everything we talk about this week is in the show notes, including links to that Patreon giveaway, including links to your Audible trial, including every book, every person. So it's all there for you. Click away, enjoy. All right, it's time for my conversation with Jay Connor. Hi, everybody, and welcome to The Stacks. I am here today with Jay Connor, who is a writer. You may have seen his work in Huffington Post, The Root, or Double XL. He's also the creator and co-host of the Extraordinary Negroes podcast. Hi, Jay. Welcome to the show.
What's going on?
We're super excited to have you. I also have to give Jay another title before I let him introduce himself. He is the official podfather of the Stacks podcast. And you might be like, what does that mean? Basically, it means that I met Jay one day at a party, and Jay was like, nice to me. And it's like, I have a podcast. And I said, will you help me? Because I'm not afraid to ask for help. And he said, yes. And then that's what he's been doing. And then I asked him to come on the show. So we're all really lucky that Jay's a nice guy. Besides being a nice guy and a writer and a podcaster, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm a father. Okay. I have a son by the name of Aiden, who is 3 years old.
Oh.
I am a son myself, obviously.
Okay.
Brother. I'm hyper creative. I do a lot of speaking. I do a lot of panels. I do a lot of community outreach. Just really try to touch the people through my creative platforms.
So I love it.
That's what I try to do.
And where are you from?
I am from, it's funny that you ask that, because every time I answer this question, people look at me crazy.
Okay.
People that know me, because I'm from, I consider, like, when people ask me that question, I say I'm from Phoenix, because that's where I lived at before I was out here.
Here being L.A.
Okay.
Because
I lived in Phoenix since I was 19.
Okay.
So basically about like 10, 12 years. So.
But what about the first 19 years?
But before that.
Yeah. Take it all the way back.
I was born in the Bronx in New York.
Okay.
And then we left there when I was about 9 or 10 and then moved to Tulsa, Oklahoma. But okay. I consider Tulsa my hometown, since that's where basically I spent my formative years.
Okay. So you've lived everywhere.
Pretty much. I just progressively worked my way. Well,
you'll be in Hawaii soon.
Something like
Japan.
Tokyo.
We're just working all the way back around. You'll be in London, and then you'll be back in the Bronx.
Just keep moving till I circumnavigate the globe, right?
Of all the places you've lived, what's a favorite? What's your favorite?
I would say Tulsa. I'm not particularly fond of heat.
Okay.
This weather outside right now is
very hot in LA.
Killing me right now. Tulsa, you know, that's just where I really just kind of came into my own as a person.
Okay.
That's where I have a lot of my memories and, just really grew up.
So. Are there a lot of black folks in Tulsa?
That's funny you mention that, because
Jay's a black folk.
Because
just FYI, if you didn't know, so am I.
Yeah. By the name of my show, The Extraordinary Negroes, I'm white. Nah.
What if you were? What show is that?
That would be a good
show. The white guys talking about The Extraordinary Negro show?
That would be pretty interesting.
All right. Anyone looking for a podcast idea? For sale.
I wouldn't listen to it, but it'd be probably very interesting. But there's a lot of black folks out there. And it's funny because, much like Phoenix, you never realize what the entire demographic of a city is until you go there like to visit. Because when you live there, you're around the people that you hang out with. You're around your friends, your family, whatever. When you go there to visit and you're not around them anymore and you're like years removed, you're like, holy shit, where are...
Oh, you're saying when you go back.
Yeah, when I go back.
I see. I was going to say, because like when I go visit a city, I feel like I only see white people because you're like downtown, at the hotels or whatever.
Yeah.
But you're saying once you've lived there and then you go back to visit.
Because when I lived there, I was always around black people because we were always at church. We were always at like playing basketball. Like I was always around. Now when I go... Because obviously I don't have those same connections with friends and stuff anymore. And like, I'm like, where the hell is everybody at? So
where is your family?
They're scattered all over
the
country.
My mom
lives in Atlanta with my sister.
Okay.
And my dad lives in Dallas.
So when you go home, like to visit family, you're not even going to anywhere that you've lived.
Not even going home.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. So you're not really going home. You're just going to visit family.
I'm going there.
You're going to see the family. That happens.
Yeah.
You've also lived other places in the world. Because you had a career in the past, or a job, career or job, I don't know.
Yeah.
You were in the military, the U.S. military.
Yeah, I've lived an amazing life. I'm on like my fourth career
I know. We've already talked about you being a writer and a podcaster, and now you're in the military, and we're only 4 minutes into the recording.
And I was a social worker for 8 years.
Before the military or after?
After the military.
So you're a student in school. You graduate high school. The next thing you do is military?
Yeah.
Then social work.
Yeah, then social work. What happened with the military thing was that, like, when I was in high school, I hated school. Okay. I hated school bad. I was out there acting like a damn idiot. I was engaged in a lot of activities that I should not have been.
Okay, we won't talk about that.
That were questionable.
Okay.
That included potential lawsuits.
Okay, and, maybe we should talk about it.
And criminal activity, but I was just, you know, I wasn't.
You're also a kid.
It wasn't because I was bad. It was because I was bored. I lived in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Sure. There wasn't shit else to do. Sure. So, long story short, I was paranoid that when I that they weren't going to let me in the military because I had a criminal record.
Oh.
But apparently, the last case I had was dismissed, so it wasn't an issue.
Got it. And what year was this?
I went in 1999.
So you went pre-9/11.
Yeah, I was pre-9/11.
Whoa.
So
that's different. I feel like most people like that I are it's provoked by 9/11. I feel like that's the story that you hear, right?
Yeah, but at the same time, I have a unique perspective because I witnessed the before and the after.
Sure, talk about it.
You know what I'm saying? So when I went in, I was scared, like scared shitless, because I was like, you know, you see the movies and you're like, no, I don't want to get shot up, whatever.
Right.
So, but I knew that after I got out the military, I did not want to go to school. I was like, I'm not doing college.
Okay.
Fuck that. Like, it's not it's not happening. So I was like, I'm just going to like hang out and, you know, live my life.
Right.
Do me. And I did that for a year, and I was just like working in Walgreens in the photo lab.
This is after?
After high school.
After the high, okay, before the military.
Yeah, before the military. So I did that for like a year, making like $8 an hour, just being super lame. Right. I was the guy that was like walking to and from work.
Right.
People laughing at me.
Oh.
Like I was just lame. You
know
what I mean?
Early environmental conscious. You were like, I'm not going to drive, I'm going to walk.
Sure.
It's positive spin on your life.
Sure, sure. Yeah. So after a year of being just lame and seeing my friends like off in college and getting careers, and I'm like, I got to do something.
Okay.
But my biggest thing is, like I said, I hated school. So I was like, I got to find a way to skip the line.
Right.
So how can I skip them but not do the college thing? So then my mom started talking about like, well, maybe you should do the military. And I was like, that is absolutely not happening.
Like, I'd rather go to school.
Yeah, I would much rather do homework and pay tuition than go to college. So I ended up joining, long story short, and I scored so high on the ASVAB test, like the entrance exam, that they thought that I cheated.
Oh.
But they made me take it again, and then I scored even higher. So,
bye.
So
don't underestimate Jay.
Seriously. All those Fs, I did those on purpose. Mm-hmm. So long story short, I got in the military, and I was stationed when I was in tech school. You know, you're with your friends and they ask you where you want to go. Tech school is basically the military equivalent of college.
Okay.
But it's like,
so you ended up in college.
It's like an accelerated college where they teach you your job for a period of like 3 months.
Okay.
So I'm in tech school. They ask you where you want to go, like where you want to live. And I'm like, oh, I'm trying to go to New York. I'm trying to go to Hawaii. I'm trying to go somewhere like sexy. And they're like, yeah, you're going to Tucson, Arizona. And I was like, what the hell is Tucson? First, I knew everybody knows I hate heat.
Okay.
Anything over like 70, I'm like, yo, this is trash.
This is a nightmare.
So I'm like, Arizona. And then all my friends are like, oh, but Tucson's a party town. They have U of A. It's so dope. You're going to love it. Did it, yada, yada. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, I'll be sweating, but at least I have the time of my life.
They have air conditioning.
Listen, Tucson, Arizona is the armpit of America. I have never been so miserable in my life. And I was out there for 4 years.
Okay. But So that's where you get stationed.
Yeah, that's where I was stationed.
That's where you get stationed. And what are you doing for the military?
In the military, I was what was called a 3CO, which is a computer network administrator.
So you're doing computer stuff.
So I was the Geek Squad guy was like running the servers and doing all like the super smart stuff. And I had a TSSCI clearance, which is like, I think it's next to the highest you can have.
So you and like Jared Kushner have the same clearance.
Something like that. Yeah. So it was like up there.
One of you at least is qualified for the clearance.
Yes.
Anyways, continuing on, where did you get stationed other places outside of Tucson? Did you get to travel at all in the military?
I did.
Where'd you go?
One day I was waking up to go to work.
Okay.
And I get a phone call and they're like, yo, don't bother coming in. And I'm like, okay. You know what I mean? Like I'm with it, but I'm kind of curious and nosy. And they're like, yo, just turn the TV on.
Oh, shit.
So I'm like, okay, turn the TV on. I see smoking buildings. It was 9/11.
Right.
So within a week, I was gone. Like, and it was crazy.
Where did you go?
I'm gonna get to that in a second.
I'm on the edge of my seat.
You're like, oh my god, this is amazing.
This is such a good story.
So, yeah, within a week of that happening, I was gone. Like, it was insane. Like, you get orders, and they're just like, you got so many days to, you know, get this, get your gear, get your gun, get this, get that, do that, bounce, peace, have a nice life. And my girlfriend at the time was like tripping out. I was tripping out because I was like, I joined to do computer work. I didn't join to go, you know, kill right. people. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But that was my destiny. So I was out in, to answer your question.
Yeah.
I was out in Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Kuwait. I was a part of Operation Enduring Freedom. So that whole Southwest.
So also Asia very situation. Cold places. So the heat was lovely.
Oh, no. It was very, very hot. Especially in Saudi Arabia. Oh,
I feel like they talk about like how cold it is in Iraq.
Nah,
and
player.
Kuwait.
Nah, it was hot.
Oh, my God.
But I do remember in Kuwait, it was, I remember looking up at the sky and it was just like pitch black. Like it looked like Armageddon, I guess, from all like the burning oil and stuff like that.
No stars.
I was just like, this is crazy.
They were covered by smoke is what you're saying.
So, yeah. It was.
Wow.
It was interesting experience.
And did you have the same job, though, over there? You were running computer servers?
I did. But the irony about that is there's a distinction between doing that in the comfort of sure. an office, air-conditioned right. building. And, you know, you would think because I was Air Force, like, oh, he's, you know, that's all the smart guys, basically. The guys okay. that you're like, you don't want them on the front lines because that's where the grunts are at.
Got it.
So, but my problem was that, like, I was supporting, like, Marines and Army and those guys. So I was having to do what they were doing while doing my job.
So you're on the ground.
So I was treated like they were treated. So oh, it was shit. So I was like, I did not sign up for
you're
this.
You're like, I wanted to be in the sky, like kind of like far away.
You know what I'm saying?
Wow. So you literally were like, I'm gonna join the Army to like not go to college, and then you're like, I'm in the Army and now we're at war.
Air Force.
Or I'm yes. sorry, Armed Forces. Air Force.
Armed Forces.
And how long were you in the Air Force?
I was in the Air Force for 4 years, and then when I was about to get out, they have this thing called, like, I think it's called stop loss,
mm-hmm.
where if your job is critically manned, or if they need you they can make you stay in the military. So
for
I was
how much
about
longer?
To go, I don't remember the rules specifically. Holy,
so you're like, I'm done, and then they're like, sorry, we need you.
They can do that, and I was... It was like the threat of it for a while, right before I was about to get out. And I was like,
But they didn't do it.
Nah, you thankfully got I got out in time. Yeah.
Okay, so you get out, then you go to college, don't you? Because how do you become a social worker?
No. What happened was I got out and the military offered me like this ridiculous, because my job was, you know, one, critically manned, two, very important.
Right.
And three, extremely lucrative as a civilian.
Oh.
So what they try to do is they try to retain you. So they offer like $20,000-$40,000 tax free to get you to, you know, like a
bonus
free agent.
Type thing.
Yeah, like a reenlistment bonus. And I was like, nah, I don't want it. I'm stressed out. I don't want nothing to do with this shit. I'm out. So I get out, and then I have like the Pentagon reach out. I have Raytheon. I have General Dynamics. I have all these like huge lucrative companies offering me to do the exact same thing that I was doing in the service, but instead of making like $7 an hour in the military, they're offering me like $250 a year to
wow.
start at. Because to do my job, you got to remember too, outside of my job, I had that clearance.
Right.
So that clearance on the outside costs like $80,000.
Oh.
So they're like, even if you don't know the job, if you have the clearance, they're like, we'll take
we
you and we'll teach you the job.
Yeah.
But you have both already. So.
Wow.
They were offering me jobs.
So did you do it or you were like, no?
They were offering me jobs to start at $250 and I was so stressed out. I was just like, I'm not fucking with this ever again.
Bye.
No.
Goodbye.
No.
Okay. So, here's the thing. I want to talk to you about your life so bad. I'm so interested. But also, allegedly, this is a podcast about books.
Oh. So is it?
Can you tell? We've talked about so many books so far.
I don't know.
So we're going to kind of fast forward.
Yeah.
How did you become... Also, if you want to bug Jay about his life, he's all over social media, and I'll put that in the show notes. You can, like, go harass him, and, like, it's fine. He doesn't care. quoth I. How did you discover that you were a writer, or were you always a writer throughout these other parts of your life, and then you were like, I want to – like, how did becoming leaning into your creative side happen?
I had always been really naturally, you know, there's people that have to like learn to be good at something, and yeah. others that are just, they have just a natural inclination.
Yeah, of course.
I always gravitated towards the arts. So I was always great at like drawing, writing, creating music, all that stuff. Like it just naturally came to me.
Okay.
And I always just wrote just, you know, my ideas. And I kind of used to play around on like MySpace, where a lot of us, you know, the Very Smart Brothers, my co-host Alex, a lot of us fostered our, you know, our cultivated our talents on MySpace, on the blogs and stuff like that. So I used to go in there and write and just, you know, just really just kind of express myself. And once I got into the social work thing, and I've been doing that for a while, I kind of realized, like, I started feeling that burnout settling in. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, yo, I do not want to be doing this anymore. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. I feel restricted by the limitations of the government, that there's things that you want to do, but you always have to worry about like budgetary constraints or like if it's legal, or like from 9 to 5, you can be there, but at 6 o'clock, like don't have them kids calling you. You know what I'm saying? So it's just, I felt it was a lot of BS. So I got kind of burned out on that. And I thought, well, what is it that I really would like to do? Since I have this thing about changing careers entirely every 4 or 5 years.
Got it. Evidently. Is this a rule or just something that you've been doing?
I don't know.
But we'll see. Okay.
I don't know. So I decided to write. So I had been, you know, dabbling in it professionally beforehand. But I went to a conference in Phoenix, like this big writing conference. It's at the, I think it's called the Piper's House, which is like where all like the journalists and professional poets and all that stuff go. And I went to there, and I was really, I won some contest to go there for free because I think it's like $600 or something. And I was really just like enamored by that process. And I was like, yo, I think this is, you know, something that I want to do, but I can't do this literature stuff. Like, it's too draining. Like, me being a writer, I'm so meticulous about mm-hmm. stuff. I was like, it's too draining. So I need to find a way to be that creative, but something that's more expeditious. So I took a screenwriting class at Scottsdale Community College. And I was like, oh my God, I can tell fictitious stories, and they're not so drawn out, you know what I mean? It's an entirely different format. And I was like, oh, this is dope, I'm in. So I saved up a bunch of money and made that move
to LA,
to Koreatown. You know, that's everybody's rite of passage when you move to LA.
I didn't ever live there. I never lived in Koreatown. Did you do screenwriting?
Yes, and I mean, I still dabble in it, but my first, when I moved out here, it was just such a uphill battle for everybody. I mean, you know, writing, there's a million writers out here. There's a million actors. But I just came out here and thought, there's going to be people that work harder than I am. There's going to be people that are better writers than I am. But there's going to be nobody here that's going to work as hard as I am and write as good as I do.
Sure.
So I just started networking and going to every event. I was on the internet looking up like networking events and just crashing them. I was looking up at like, you know, what the other writers and what they were being and just going. And through that, I was able to land in the writer's room over at AMC.
Cool.
For a show over there. So
what show?
Strange Angel, which is out now.
Oh.
So, yeah, it took like 2 years to come out.
Wow.
But that's the process.
Okay.
So, yeah, I definitely still dabble in it. I'm working on some stuff right now for other people.
But what are you like, what's like the stuff that you normally, your bread and butter for writing? Like, what are your, like, if I go and look you up and I go see your articles, are they articles? Are they short stories? Are they commentary, like op-eds? What's the kind of stuff that you generally write?
Oh, generally I write a little bit of everything. no, just to be honest, I mean, I do a lot of op-eds. I do a lot of feature writing for different publications. I write a lot of jokes for comedians.
Okay.
You're not supposed to know that, though.
It's okay. Just don't tell us which comedians, and then we'll be okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, I ghostwrite for comedians. I ghostwrite for other writers. I do a lot of editing. I wrote for, have you played the game Black Card Revoked?
No.
I write for them.
Okay.
So, yeah, I just keep my hands in a lot
of
different
things.
Does
that mean my black card is revoked if I don't play the game?
No.
Okay.
No.
Kind of feels like.
No. You're good.
Great.
Until we play.
And then I lose.
Then your black card's revoked.
Okay. Cool. So I'm never going to play that game. Cool. I'll be safe. So who are some writers that you love or that inspire you or that you look up to or that you want to write like, or, you know, who are your favorite
kind of writers? In general terms or authors?
You could say general terms for now.
I am a big fan of Ta-Nehisi Coates.
He does both.
I'm amazed that The Atlantic let him go.
What's that about?
I don't know, but all of us are talking about it.
Do we know where he's going?
We have no idea.
We should plug right now. Also, next week we're talking about his book, Between the World and Me. Are we? Did you not read it?
No. I will by that time, right?
Oops. No, we are. And it's so good. And he is, I mean, he's so good. Okay, sorry.
He's a man, yeah.
Yeah, he is. He must have something that he's doing.
No, he's doing a lot. He's just not writing for them. He's also writing comic books and stuff now.
Right, I know that. He's doing like the Black Panther thing. Yeah. But he was doing that with The Atlantic. So I'm just wondering.
What else?
Like why he would leave them if he doesn't have like another.
Maybe they didn't cut the check.
How could they not?
I don't know. I know he ain't cheap. I know that much.
Well, sure. But like, that's like.
You got to have
him. He's your LeBron. You find a way. You end up with JaVale McGee also on the team. Word. Like, but that's fine because you have LeBron.
Because you have LeBron.
Like, that's okay.
Maybe they didn't put enough money in the salary cap.
I don't know.
They didn't budget it properly.
I do love, do you know Van Newkirk who writes for them?
Yes.
He's really good.
Yes.
I think if you wanted to know my favorite writer of The Atlantic, I just really like him. He's good. So hopefully he'll get a bump then.
We'll see. But some other writers I like, I'm a big fan of Kiese Layman. I think he's amazing.
I don't know him.
He's super dope. Okay. Definitely look into him.
I'm going to put all these people in the show notes, y'all, so that you can find them and check out their work.
Yeah, the way he just deconstructs, like, blackness and, like, society is just, like, man. I'm a big fan of my guy Harry Ziad. He's an amazing writer and editor. I've had the privilege of working with him, and he came on my show once.
Oh,
I mean, if we're talking about all mediums, I really like Donnie Coates, who's a comic book writer.
Okay.
And Matthew Rosenberg. There's just so many amazing people in different spaces that I mean, Shane Black in screenwriting. There's just so many different platforms and forums that people manifest in. So
I love that. Okay, let's talk a little bit about your podcast, and then we'll move on to books. I swear, people, we're talking about books today. Maybe. I'm not committed to books anymore. I've moved on. So you have a podcast. It's called The Extraordinary Negroes.
I do.
Kind of tell us like a little, I mean, tell us about the show.
Like the elevator pitch?
I mean, I don't really want the elevator pitch, but I do want you to explain it to people who've never listened.
Okay.
You don't have to do it fully like, this is a show for, you know, you could do it more comfortable.
Nah, it's just a show in which myself and my co-host, we kind of.
Who's your co-host?
My co-host, Alex Hardy.
Thank you.
Who he and I kind of go in and we deconstruct current events, a little bit of pop culture, and just kind of relevant issues within our community. But from our perspective, we kind of give people the candy with the medicine, which is why we infuse humor. So we talk about stuff like toxic masculinity, fatherhood, financial literacy, just really meaty, topics of substance, but. We try to, like I said, give it kind of like a barbershop appeal where people can feel kind of relaxed, because if we tell you how to buy a car, you're going to kind of check out. But if we're cracking jokes and it's like you're with your folks, that, you know, that information is going to resonate with you.
Right. It's not intimidating.
Yeah.
So, it's much more casual. Yeah. And you guys also definitely talk about pop culture a ton.
Yeah.
You guys do like an Insecure recap.
We did.
And you guys talk about other people making horrible mistakes in their lives.
Yeah. But that's part of the appeal of giving people the candy with the medicine. Cause I went into it looking at it like people are used to a show like The Read where people just go in there and they just talk shit about pop culture.
Right.
That's not really my thing.
Okay.
However, if I know that that's something that appeals to you and I do it my way.
Sure.
Then I can give you the both.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? So that's why we talk about it for a little bit, but then we talk about the real stuff.
Right.
So I kind of wanted to fashion it like a morning show, like Got a radio it. Morning show.
Right. It's really good. It's funny.
Thank you.
I think it's funny. I laugh out loud sometimes. If you were going to suggest like maybe two episodes, like maybe your favorite episode, you guys have been doing it for some years now.
Yeah, we just hit 2 years.
So maybe like a favorite episode and maybe like a quintessential episode. Like this is the most extraordinary Negroes episode. And then the one that's like, Jay loves this one for people who are new to your show who might want to check it out.
I think one that I really like is the Thanksgiving dinner draft.
Okay.
I don't know if you heard that one.
I have not heard that one.
What we did is, you know, you're familiar with the concept of fantasy football.
I am. I stopped playing, though, because Colin Kaepernick's my hero. Yeah, so I'm done with all of that.
I'm done with that. But what we do, or what we did, is we took Thanksgiving dinner.
Okay.
And we drafted.
The food?
We drafted.
Or the family members?
No. The family members are good to go.
Okay, they that's have to communal. Come. They that's have communal. To come no matter what.
But we sat there and we drafted the food. Oh. And it was myself, my homeboy Law, who is an amazing writer himself, and Alex.
Okay.
And it got a lot of rave reviews and people were cracking jokes and kind of judging our individual drafts and stuff. So I definitely think that's a great episode.
And that would be like a quintessential or one of your faves?
I would say it's a fave.
Okay, and then what's like a... you know, the most extraordinary Negroes episode.
I think a recent extraordinary Negroes episode was our Mother's Day tribute.
Okay.
Where we had the luxury of interviewing our parents. We brought our mothers on.
And you interviewed each other's mom.
Yeah, we interviewed each other's mom to kind of talk about their experience as mothers and raising us and stuff. So it was really dope. It got all kinds of wonderful reviews and feedback.
That's
and
so sweet.
I think that was, because a lot of times that stuff can be really lame.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it can be trash.
That's what my husband says about this. He's like, I'm never coming on your podcast because nobody wants to hear from me. I was like, it's true. We both read the same exact book, so you're useless.
I know. I've met the guy, and, you know, I think it'd be pretty lame. No, but but yeah, I think that was a really good episode, and it really resonated with people.
Okay. I'm going to link to those episodes, but obviously just the podcast in general, but I'm excited to listen to them too. I've actually not listened to those too.
Yeah.
I didn't listen to the Mother's Day one because you told me it was really emotional and I just haven't felt comfortable. I'm not ready.
It's like This Is Us. Like, you have to be emotional.
Yeah,
prepared.
You have to, like, that show kind of fell off for me. Okay, I'm sorry.
We'll talk about this later.
We can talk about this offline. What about some podcasts that you like that aren't yours and aren't the Stacks?
I really like Ear Hustle.
Okay.
I think that concept is really dope.
Mm-hmm.
I really like what my homegirls over at Tea with Queen and Jay are doing.
Okay.
As far as creating a space in which it's unapologetically black, but not only just unapologetically black, but unapologetically black for black women.
Love that.
And just really just being raw and honest and really just speaking truth. I really like Therapy for Black Girls. I think that's an amazing platform too. Podcast too. She's been on our show as well. Trying to think, what else do I? There's just, Music Snobs. That's probably my favorite, all-time favorite podcast.
Okay.
I love it. But they do like one episode a year.
Oh.
Which is terrible.
Which is not great if you want to binge listen, unless they've been around for like 30 years.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, there's a lot of great content out there right now.
I love podcasts. I've been a podcast listener for years.
I've heard.
I do. I really love podcasts. Like, I'm like a true lover of the medium. I'm not just someone who has a podcast, but I like listen to a bazillion podcasts and I love them. And I'm so glad that people listen to them.
Yeah.
So I think it's a really cool way to discuss something in detail that is niche, you know?
You know a podcast I think you would love and I would recommend to you?
Which one?
There's this guy named Tony Kornheiser, right?
Oh, you just mean my favorite podcast that I've been listening to for 8 years straight, 5 days a week. I'm a loyal
one.
I am. It's a Tony Kornheiser show. Honestly, anybody who listens to this show probably will hate it, but that's fine. I love it. And that's all that matters. Anyways, okay, we're going to move on to books. It's finally time for books. We're only 30 minutes in, and so it's a great time to move on to books.
Okay.
Jay, yes. What's two books you love and one book you hate?
Two books I love. I have to start with anything James Baldwin. First and foremost.
Okay.
But specifically, The Fire Next Time.
So good.
Classic. Undeniable classic.
Classic.
The other book that I love is A People's History of the United States.
Howard Zinn.
By Howard Zinn.
So good.
Just to see that the perspective of America's ascension through the eyes of the have-nots. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just powerful. Powerful.
Such an amazing book. There's actually like a series of books, The People's Histories of... that is like part of, I don't know who did it. I think it's like the Howard Zinn Foundation, but it's other authors who are experts in like smaller marginalized fields.
Oh, wow.
Or smaller, Dave Zirin is this amazing sports writer and he writes The People's History of Sports. And he talks about like athletes, like uprising and protests and all this, but it's under that same scope of like looking at marginalized people's view of things. So it's like Muhammad Ali, it's, you know, Tommy Jones and Carlos.
Talking about the
yes, the Black Panthers back power salute.
I can't remember his last name.
Oh my god, this is
Dr. Carlos.
Carlos. Oh my god, this is like the biggest brain fart because I love him so much, and he's like still around, and he's so great. Yeah. Tommy Smith, and oh my god, I have to look it up. I have to look it up right now. okay, talk about the book you hate. I'm going to scream it into the microphone as soon as I figure it out.
The book I hate, which I think I feel like this is like a universally.
I'm sorry, I've got it. Tommy Smith and John Carlos.
John Carlos.
Motherfucker. Yeah. I'm so sorry. I feel so dumb because I love them.
Have you met him? Dr. No. John Carlos is so cool.
He works at San Jose State, I think.
He's so cool.
One of them does. I'm from the Bay. Anyways.
He's amazing.
Dave Zirin, this writer, he also wrote this book called Welcome to the Terror Dome, and it's all about sports.
Yeah.
And I love it so much. And he like, he's just, it's a really good non, he's a really good nonfiction writer. He actually has a book on John Carlos's life. They're like pals. And he has a book on, he has a lot of books, and he's really great at book about soccer. I love him, Dave Zirin. He also sometimes writes for like different publications, mostly The Nation.
Okay.
And he's often like the talking head on like CNN when it's like Colin Kaepernick does something or like FIFA does something. They're like, oh, Dave Zirin.
Yeah.
He's great.
Yeah.
Anyways, okay, sorry. One book you hate.
One book I hate. There was a book I read a long time ago, and I thought it was trash when I read it, and I still think it's trash. And it's probably one of the few books I remember thinking it was trash. The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People.
Okay, you're the second person to put that as the book you hate on this show.
I hate that damn book.
Why do you hate it?
I just felt like it was just manufactured, just trash. You know what I mean? Like, it just felt like something, like, it felt like a meme, like a book equivalent of a meme. You know how you see that, like, fast food advice column type shit? Like, that's how I remember it being, like, no.
This is Ross said the same thing. That was his book.
Yeah, I can't get with that book.
Okay, what's the last great book you read?
The last great book I read was Every Little Step, My Story by Bobby Brown. His memoir. Did you ever read that?
I did not read it, but people love it. It's so good.
With the cocaine chicken?
I didn't read it. Is it so good?
It's so great because we see he has this, you know, this extravagant and, you know, fantastical life that we've always bear witness to.
Mm-hmm.
But to know, like, there's other levels to it to what makes it even more crazy. Like, it's just, it's a trip.
Oh my gosh. Did you see the new Whitney documentary?
I wanted to, but it was too far for me to feel like driving.
I saw it.
Was it good?
He's in it.
Was it good?
I liked it. I mean, I really liked it. I cried. Yeah. I mean, I didn't cry, but I felt like crying, which is something that I do a lot. Like, when I say that I cry when I read a book, I don't ever actually cry except for once. I usually just feel like crying, and I'm like, acknowledge feeling like crying, moving on. But there's some really great footage of her singing and like some great footage of her behind the scenes. And then some of it is kind of like, it's interesting that you're drawing these conclusions. Like, they put things together towards the end of the movie that make it sound like this thing caused this thing, but it's not necessarily clear that this thing caused this thing. And obviously she's not there to defend or clarify.
Yeah.
And so some of that makes me feel weird.
Kind of jump into conclusions.
It just feels... it's hard to know who to trust because I know a lot of the people like in the family and like people on the side of the family helped produce the movie. So then you start to be like, well, who, you know.
Ulterior motives.
Exactly. But Bobby's in it.
I wanted to see it, but all the theaters I saw that it was at was on the West Side because it's like a limited theater run.
It's at Arclight in Hollywood, or that's where I saw it.
Oh, that's not too far.
No, you're close right now. Okay. What are you currently reading?
Currently chipping away at A Conspiracy of Stars by Olivia A. Cole, one of my dearest friends.
All right. What's it about?
It is about a young lady who's kind of having this, like, it's the sci-fi adventure.
Okay.
And one of the things that I really appreciate and love about it is the fact that it's heavily diverse.
Mm.
And Olivia, who is a white woman,
ooh,
one of my few white friends, actually, she is so committed to like diversity and, you know, proper representation through this medium. And I think that there might be people that find that kind of like questionable to have like, why is this lady always, but like, she genuinely has like the best intentions, and
that's
an amazing writer, and she's been doing this for a while, and she's one of my dearest friends.
Okay.
And I nag her like almost every day.
Great.
So shout out to Olivia.
Shout out to Olivia. I love her already.
Yeah.
How do you pick your next book? Like, do you use reviews or do you get word of mouth, or are you just on the blogs?
Primarily, how I choose my next book is when people email me and ask me to read their book for the show.
Oh.
I'm not going to lie. Like, generally, you know, as you are well aware, you'll have PR firms reach out and be like, hey, we got this new thing, we'd love you to check it out. Sometimes it sounds interesting. Sometimes it doesn't. I usually try to read the ones that sound interesting. But outside of that, generally friends' suggestions or if I see something on social media where people are like buzzing about it. So those are the ways.
Do you ever feel like you're reading books that someone sends you? Like, do you always finish this book, those books? Or are you sometimes like, I don't like this, I got to go?
If it's whack, I can't.
Okay.
Can't do it.
Yeah. I mean, that's what happens when books get sent to you. Like, for me, I feel like if I really like a book or I'm interested in a book, I'll read it. But if something gets sent to me, it's a lot harder for me to power through because I'm like, I don't even really want to be reading this. And then sometimes someone sends me a book and I read it. I'm like, this is so great. Like, send me everything they've ever written. But it's easier to put down a book that someone else asked you to read than it is a book that I feel like I pick up on my own.
Yeah. No, I agree. But also a lot of ones that people send to us tend to kind of have like a similar theme.
Blackness
or like, you know, struggle or social injustice. So I'm always intrigued by that kind of stuff. And especially like the most recent book, I think you said you got sent to you. It's basically
All the Women in My Family Sing.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
That one sounds amazing. And I've been working my way through that too.
Yeah, I gotta do it. I haven't done it. I have a hard time when it's essays because I'm like, oh, I'll just read one at a time.
Yeah.
But I don't like to read like that.
Yeah.
So then I read one and then I'm like, oh, so I have to just sit down and just read it cover to cover. Yeah. I like to read things like that.
So if they're listening, I'm going to get to it.
Shout out. We both are. What's on your nightstand?
What is on my nightstand currently is Francesca Ramsey's Well That Escalated Quickly.
Oh, people love that.
I've actually
heard people love that and do not like that. I've heard it's very polarizing.
I can believe that. See, for me,
I think people either relate or they don't.
Yeah. Because, like, for me, that's one of the books that got sent to us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, heard people reached out and were like, hey, we got this book. Mm-hmm. And it sounded interesting. And it's somebody who I would never particularly call myself like a fan of hers. Mm-hmm. Not like on some hate, but I just don't really know her like that.
Totally.
So it gave me an opportunity to kind of like figure out who she was and kind of understand her story. And it's pretty, I feel like it's a good book.
Okay, cool. I love to hear that.
I can see how
you can see how it would be polarizing. Yeah. And
also, I can't date Jesus.
Oh.
I said Jesus.
I could date Jesus. I love Jesus and Meryl, both of them.
I would say Michael's last name, but I don't want to butcher it. I think it's Arsenault.
Oh, I thought it was Arsenault.
It might be. I think it is Arsenault.
That's what I was saying. It's a New York Times bestseller already.
It is.
Which is exciting.
We were just talking about this like 2 days ago.
Yeah, I think that's when the list came out. I feel like I saw it everywhere.
Yeah. So
I'm excited to read that book. I know he talks a lot about Beyonce in it, so I like that.
Yeah.
What's a book that you love to recommend to people?
Generally anything from James Baldwin.
Yeah.
I really like to recommend to people, Black, White, or Indifferent, just because I have such a tremendous appreciation and respect for how he analyzes and deconstructs the world and in being unapologetic in doing that. But as far as a contemporary alternative to that, I love to recommend people read Between the World and Me.
So good.
Yeah.
So good. Well, I think a lot of people compare them often.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot. Do you know the author Jesmyn Ward? She wrote the book Sing Unburied Sing, and then she wrote the book we did on our fourth episode called Men We Reaped. It's her memoir.
Mm.
She's a Southern, she's from Mississippi. She's a Southern woman, Black woman. And she also writes a lot of, you know, op-eds or features or whatever.
Yeah.
I think that she is in that same vein.
Yeah.
But because she writes a lot of fiction, which I mean James Baldwin did as well.
Yeah.
I think that people don't think of her as like a social political critic of Black American experience, but I think she is. She's a beautiful writer. I'm gonna get you Men We Reaped. Really good.
People make the same argument about Toni Morrison too though.
Yeah. So. Yeah, people do. It's interesting that women often aren't considered, like Black women aren't considered in that same breath with the two of them. But I feel like there are women who do that. And for me, Jesmyn Ward is in that same, where she's critiquing and dissecting what it means to be Black in America, which is what I think that they both do so well. Anyways, I'm going to get you Men We Reaped. I think you'll really like it.
Okay.
Oh, have you read If Beale Street Could Talk? Whatever.
No.
It's coming out as a movie.
I got to read that before it comes out.
I got to read it too. Shout out to Diverse Book Club. They're on Instagram and they're doing that for their August book. So excited. Let's see. What's a good book that someone's recommended to you?
A good book that somebody recommended to me long ago and far away was The Writer Got Screwed. I don't remember the name of the author.
That's fine. I'll find it.
But the premise of the book is it basically offers like sample contracts and gives you information on like entertainment law and entertainment lawyers and things of that nature so that you don't get screwed over a writer within the entertainment industry. So as somebody who had moved out there in 2014 and knew nothing about nothing, I was like, oh my God, this is like the Bible.
This is what I need. What's a good book you received as a gift?
Ta-Nehisi Coates. Okay. That was probably the best book that I've received as a gift.
Someone gave that to you.
Yeah, somebody gave that to me.
That's a good one. Do you set any reading goals for yourself?
I try to.
You do?
I don't really have the time that I had in the past. When I think about my time in Phoenix, I had all the disposable time in the world.
And you didn't use it.
And then you move to LA and it's like, you don't have 24 hours anymore in a day. You have like 5.
Right.
So I try to read at least a book a month.
Okay.
But now that I've, I guess I can tell the audience because we were talking about this earlier. I've recently, as of like today, came across the audiobook phenomenon.
Yeah.
So now I can read like 8. You know what I'm saying?
It's really helpful. It's important to me that the supplements I take are of the highest quality, and that's why for almost 4 years now, I have been drinking AG1. Unlike many supplement brands, AG1 is constantly searching for how to do things better. They're at 52 iterations of their formula and counting. Their team is always trying to find better ways to source, test, and find the best quality ingredients available. So many people have asked me if AG1 is actually the real deal. And trust me, there's a reason why I've been drinking it for so long. Quality for AG1 isn't just a buzzword. It's a commitment backed by expert-led scientific research, high-quality ingredients, industry-leading manufacturing, and rigorous testing. At each step of the process, AG1 goes above and beyond industry standards. I know I can trust what's in every scoop of AG1 because they totally obsess over product quality, the standards of manufacturing partners, and sustainable practices. Taking care of my health shouldn't be complicated, and AG1 simplifies this by covering my nutritional bases and setting myself up for success in just 60 seconds each morning. AG1 ingredients are heavily researched for efficacy and quality, and I love that every scoop also includes vitamin C and zinc to support my immune system, which is so important for me, especially with the germs that the mini stacks have running around and going to a cesspool called preschool. I've stayed partnered with AG1 for so long because they make such a high quality product, and I genuinely look forward to drinking it every single day. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3 and K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/thestacks. That's drinkag1.com/thestacks. Check it out.
Let's face it, people have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number smart beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Welcome to Fail Better, David Duchovny's new podcast with Lemonada Media. On Fail Better, David, who has experienced both low and high-profile failures throughout his life, explores the vast world of failure, how it holds us back, propels us forward, and ultimately shapes our lives. Each week, he'll chat with guests like Ben Stiller, Bette Midler, and more about how our perceived failures have actually been our biggest catalysts for growth, revelation, and even healing. Through these conversations, he hopes listeners can learn how to embrace the opportunity of failure and fail better together. Fail Better is out now wherever you get your podcasts.
Are there things that you wish were different about your reading life besides reading more?
Definitely wish I could read more. I definitely wish that I was more adventurous in the type of books that I chose.
Yeah.
I think a lot of times people get in their comfort zones.
Yeah.
And they just kind of feel like, okay, well, let me stick to these genres or these authors and not really venture outside of that.
And if you're not reading a ton, you don't want to waste your time reading something that you're not sure you're going to like. I think that's what happens with me. It's like, oh, am I going to like this romance? Like, I don't know. I know I'm going to like this nonfiction book.
Yeah.
Like, I know this book that is what I'm interested in, I'm going to like, versus it's going to take me twice as long to read. You know, I think that also can be part of it.
It's a lot like when you go to a restaurant.
Sure.
You think about like, oh man, I can go to, you know, wherever, get me some crab legs.
Right.
But then I might think about going to this other spot. And if it's trash, then I could have had my crab legs.
And I'm not even satisfied. And
yeah.
Totally. It's the same thing. It's like prioritizing your time.
For real.
Are there any genres in particular that you love or don't so much?
I love memoirs. Mm. I love collections of essays.
Okay.
I love self-help books a lot.
Mm.
And I really, really, really love biographies and autobiographies.
Okay.
I love those. I love to kind of learn how people became who they are.
So you're a nonfiction person.
Definitely.
Me too.
Do not fuck with fiction at all.
Fiction's very hard for me. I'm trying. It's hard.
Yeah.
I like nonfiction. I love nonfiction. I
cannot do fiction.
Yeah, it's harder for me. I have to, but it's harder. How do you read? I mean, we just heard that you do now listen to audiobooks, but
yes.
How do you normally read? On an e-reader or an actual book?
I tried to join the e-reader revolution, but it just seemed weird to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm an old school bookhead.
I tried to start a movement called Books Bitch, but I don't know, it didn't really work.
Books Bitch?
Yeah, my sister-in-law was going to help me design a graphic to be really cool, but we never did it because it kind of didn't make sense because it was more just like, I don't have an e-reader. Like, this was like 10 years ago or like 8 years ago. I was like, I don't have a reader. I read books, bitch, but it didn't really.
If I would have known about it, I would have been reading books, bitch,
yeah,
too. You know,
I feel like
I'm
Books Bitch is funny, but it kind of just like, I don't know.
That's
it didn't
funny.
Really have a mission. It just was like something to say to people.
It sounded cool.
Yeah, it was just like our thing.
It's a flag.
Anyways, it didn't work. But here we are now at the Stacks. Maybe we could have a pin that says the Stacks.
Bitch.
Books, bitch.
Stacks, bitch.
Yeah, that's going to be our new tagline. Where do you, like, when you're reading, what's your ideal setup? Location, time of day? Do you have some food or drink? Or, like, what's your, like, Jay's perfect reading?
I'm not a late night reader.
Okay. Because you fall asleep.
Because I would fall asleep.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
It has to be, like, the middle of the day.
Okay.
It has to be quiet.
No music.
I can listen to music, but it can't have words.
Okay.
And the music has to be, like, jazz or something that's kind of, like, ambient.
Okay.
Something mellow. That's really the only way that I can...
But is it like, are you at home? Are you outside? Are you at the beach? Are you at the pool? Are you on an airplane?
I can only read it at the house.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I can't be out somewhere because then I'm going to want to do it. Like, if I'm at the beach, I'm going to enjoy the beach.
Oh, see, that's how I enjoy the beach.
See, no.
I'm only a beach reader.
I'm reading bikinis when I'm at
the
beach.
All right, let's not get in trouble here. What's a book where you feel like you've learned a lot?
A book that I felt like I learned a lot was The Anatomy of Story by John Truby, which is a book about writing, about how to create a story, what makes a story, you know, what it is, the different elements of it, like how to really just be a dope ass writer. So that was definitely a book that I learned a lot. But a series that I learned a lot, and I hope that people are listening, there's a series of books called How Done It, because a lot of times people wonder, like, how do writers know how to do, like, write for, like, ER or how to write for, like, this? So this book series, How Done It, like, they break down, like, police procedures and, like, medical jargon and, like poisons and, like, what it looks like when you kill somebody and the different different terminology.
But so is this just good for writers or is
this just for writers?
Okay. So you're, so if you're not a writer, ignore him.
It's completely useless. But it makes you sound like you know what you're talking about whenever you're writing.
Who done it?
Actually, I think it's How Done It.
How Done It. I'll add it in the show notes.
Yeah.
That's so cool. So it gives you basically like you're because you're obviously not an expert on brain surgery if you're a television writer.
Yeah.
At least not yet.
Nope.
But when you get How Done It or Who Done It.
You sound like you know what the hell you're doing.
Wow. This is amazing.
Because a lot of times when you're on a network, you can afford a consultant.
Sure.
You're writing a spec. Or you can't afford a consultant. You got to sound like you know what the hell you're talking about.
Got it. That's just, and so each book is like a different.
Yeah.
Got it. Topic. Okay, we're switching it up totally. We're taking it all the way back to your Tulsa and or Bronx days.
Yes.
What's a favorite book from your childhood?
I don't have a specific one. I have a series.
Go ahead.
Do you remember the Choose Your Own Adventure series?
No.
You don't?
Nope.
Those were the.
You were so hoping I was gonna be like, yeah.
Those were
it.
The greatest books ever. No. What you did was you got the book and then you'd read it and then it would like have like a cliffhanger uh-huh. and it'd be like, okay, you'd be like, you're walking down the street, all of a sudden a man walks up and he points a gun at your face.
Cool.
What do you do?
Close the book. Go to bed.
But it's like if you fight him off, you go to page 5. If you run, you go to page 7.
Cool.
So you pick your adventure, and then just at each different page, it spirals off into other things.
That's cool.
Those books were the shit.
And there was a bunch of different ones.
Yeah, there was all kinds. There was a whole series of them.
Wow.
They were amazing.
Cool. There's an adult book that's like that. I don't know what it's called. Ross was telling me about it on his episode.
Oh, really?
Where it's like 5 different versions of like the same story, and you can read it like different ways. Like it, like do you move? I'll try to find the name of it. I'll send it to you, but I'll also put it in the show notes.
That sounds like the same thing.
What's a book if you were a teacher that you would assign in high school to your students?
A book I would assign. I don't remember the author, but it would be Lies My Teacher Told Me.
Oh yeah. I haven't read that yet. It came out recently.
No.
No?
No, that's been out for a while.
Then maybe there's a new like a new edition or something.
It might be.
Yeah, I feel like I've seen it a lot recently. Maybe they just like paperbacked it or something.
Because I think one of the biggest, I can't think of the word because my brain is fried, but one of the biggest challenges that teenagers face is that they're not told to be inquisitive.
Right, or like to push back.
Yeah, you're not supposed to challenge authority or tradition mm-hmm. ever.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a big proponent of that because it's okay to ask. Just because something is presented to you, you shouldn't take it at face value.
Right.
And that's the same thing that, you know, I definitely want to, as my son gets older, that I want to, you know, tell him to do.
Right.
Like, ask questions,
sure.
Whether it comes from me or anybody else. Like, if you don't believe it, and it doesn't feel right in your system, in your soul, ask questions.
Totally.
Challenge the status quo.
Well, I have two things. So one thing is that's something that Ashley and I were talking about last week about like curriculum in school.
Yeah.
Is that when your teacher tells you like these are the books we're reading, automatically as a student you think, oh, this book is important or meaningful or a classic, or this book is elevated in some way.
Yeah.
Because it's been chosen by my teacher who is elevated in my eyes. And that's how it ends up that like something like The Great Gatsby becomes this all important book because you're like told it's a great book, but no one is like, oh, you should read Giovanni's Room, right? Like it's like kids aren't being told like this is the book we're reading and this is just one of 30 books that deal with this topic. And like, you know, it's like there's no outlet for kids to understand that like your teacher is a flawed human and they're picking these books because of their tastes and their experiences.
Or even the curriculum is flawed.
Right. And all of it. Just like this, we were talking about like Joy Luck Club. Like that's like the Asian book everyone read when I was in high school. It was like Joy Luck Club. But it's like there are other books by other people who are other forms of Asian besides just Chinese, right? Like why weren't we reading books about and by Indian authors, right? Like those people are also Asian, but like we have this, our teachers in California have this idea that Asian is like, you know, China or Japan. And it's like, they're not talking about like, you know, Thai people or wherever, like Bali or any sort of author, Korean. It's just really interesting. And I feel like that kind of goes along with what you're saying is like, we're not told to question.
At all.
So we end up with like, an agreed upon set of good and bad books or authors or whatever. And I hate that.
And that informs your worldview and your ideology.
Right.
And in turn, you feel like we're indoctrinated basically.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying?
And like authors, like someone like James Baldwin, I didn't even read him for the first time until I was like 30.
Yeah.
And it's because I didn't realize that he was a classic author. Like, yeah. No one had told me that this person was a class, like this, these were classics.
And they don't want you reading that in school.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Right. Sure. And yeah. It's like, oh, you can read certain things, but you can't read other things, even though I could really illustrate this point better if you just read, like, you know, whatever.
I mean, I think it basically comes down to, you know, if parents aren't doing it themselves, if they're not, you know, heavily literate as far as books go, the only time you really come into that is in college.
Right.
That's when you know, things kind of brighten up and widen up.
But even then it's hard because you have so much work and it's hard to add another book when you have to read a textbook and do that. Like, I didn't really start reading to learn until I was out of college.
Yeah, yeah.
And by learn, I mean learn about, like, who I am and the world and all that kind of stuff. But the other thing, this is more on a silly note about it. Have you ever heard the phrase Wagner?
No.
Okay, so this is what teachers do a lot, I've discovered. Not all teachers, but some teachers, and also just humans in general. A Wagner is a wild-ass guess not easily refuted.
Wow, I've never heard that one before.
Yeah, a friend of my dear friend brother Matt told us this story. He was like in a marketing or something class, and his teacher was telling them about a Wagner, and it's a wild ass guess not easily refuted. But I feel like that happens a lot in school. Like, a kid will ask a question, and the teacher is like, "Yeah, definitely, it's dogs," and it's like, "Okay, well, I don't know to question that."
Yeah,
and that happens a lot also in school, but. So a lot of times when people, like my brother, will say something, I'll be like, that's a definite Wagner, my guy. Nice try.
Yeah.
But I bet that book is full of Wagners.
Yeah.
Probably. Yeah. What about a favorite book character or a least favorite character from a book?
I have a least and I have a memorable, but okay. I wouldn't necessarily say favorite. When I think of memorable characters, a character that's always haunted me and just when I first learned of her, like, it just really resonated with me, was Cola from The Bluest Eye.
I've never read it.
What?
See, these are the books that I wish that I read in school that now I'm having to read now.
You have to read that.
I know, people love it.
But just the way she navigated and, you know, processed through dealing with, like, insecurities around, like, colorism and racism and how she equated white features to, like, superiority.
Mm-hmm.
It just really just touched me because it's just like there's so much internalized racism that we don't really come to accept and acknowledge because, you know, through school, through the books we read, through all these things, we're constantly told what's right and we're othered in the process and we don't really realize it's wrong until, like, we see what's right with something that we identify with. And we're like, wait a minute, why is, you know what I'm saying? And her story always resonated with me, and as far as my least favorite would be Charlie Breedlove from the book, who was the person who was terrorizing her throughout the book.
Okay.
So definitely please read that.
I'm
gonna have to buy that for you.
I know, I used to own it. I think it's in Oakland somewhere, my mom's house. It's not there. Here. Yeah. Do you have favorite authors?
Favorite authors? Definitely James Baldwin.
Right.
Definitely Ta-Nehisi Coates. Definitely KSA. A lot of screenwriting stuff, like, you know, Robert McKee. I think I named one of them earlier, John Truby. Just, you know, writing related stuff, just really processing, like, learning and things like that.
But not Toni Morrison, even though you brought her up a few times.
I think she's great, but I think I've only read like two of her books.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I know she's Toni.
Sure.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I don't think I've ever read any of her stuff.
Really?
I know.
Why?
It's not.
Or
it's
how?
Just, I just don't think I've gotten there. Like, I read my first Octavia Butler this year. Like, I'm just getting there.
Fiction.
I'm just working through. It's fiction. That's fiction. The other thing. It's harder for me.
I'm the same way with music. Like, as far as just digging in the past and bothering with what's out now.
Yeah. It also takes time to read a book. And it's like, you have to make, you know, trying to make the time to read the books, but, you know, one at a time.
It's a commitment.
Yeah, it's a commitment. But I think I'm going to start with Beloved for Toni Morrison. I still have to read Zora Neale Hurston. I've read Barracoon that just came out this year, but I haven't read, like, Their Eyes Are Watching God. I just have a lot of work to do. I'm a work in progress.
Do you read any Roxane Gay?
I've never read Roxane Gay, but I'm going to listen to Hunger on Audible.
You should definitely check her out.
I'm going to. I love her reviews and her, like, I've read her articles. I've just never, and I've read her tweets.
She's amazing.
Shout out Roxane Gay. okay, we're going to wrap it up soon. We got just a few more questions.
Okay.
Favorite book that's been turned into a movie or a TV show or something that you've ever seen that was better than the book?
I don't read a lot of fiction.
Okay.
So I think for me, a good example of something that was transformed into a film, although it was a documentary, I would say I'm Not Your Negro by James
Baldwin.
So good.
I was going to ask you earlier if you read it. Loved it.
Because it felt like, if you're familiar with Baldwin's work, it felt like a 101, which is fine because a lot of people aren't. So it was like a good introduction into who he was.
Right.
And how important he was and kind of the circles he was a part of, the social circles he moved in. So I thought I loved I Am Your Negro. I thought it was amazing.
I loved it. It's too bad it came out in a year with so many good documentaries because it was up against the 13th and the OJ.
Yeah.
It was
it was a wrap.
All three of those could have won
best
documentary in any other year.
Yeah.
Like, and they were all great for what they did and they all did it different. And so good.
That's another good book.
Michelle
Alexander's The New Jim Crow.
The New Jim Crow. Ooh. A great book.
Talking about coming on our show. She's tough to get, man.
I'm sure. She's like a genius.
She's busy. No, she was like, I'd love to do it, but schedule. And I tried like three times.
Well, get her on.
I'm going to make it happen.
Make it happen. We want to hear from her. Love her. What's a book that you've read that you would like to see turned into a movie?
I would like to see my friend Olivia A. Cole's book series, the quote-unquote Tasha trilogy.
Got it.
On the screen. I actually gave it to AMC development executives in hopes that it would come into fruition. So my fingers crossed. Fingers are crossed.
Let's do it. We like her because she's the white lady who loves diversity in a real way.
We love white woke folks.
We do.
White folks.
Some of us are married to them. okay, here it is. My fave. If you could require the current president of the United States to read one book, what would it be?
My pick for the book that I would have 45 read would be The Invention of the White Race by Theodore W. Allen. That way he could have a better perspective of how privilege works and how it also creates consequences for other marginalized groups.
Sure.
Which is something that he basically lives every day of his life.
Right. It's his existence. All right. Do you have anything else you want to say to the people about you, books, writing, podcasting, life?
I would just say that just keep reading, folks. You know, if you got time to hit these books, definitely make it happen. I know a lot of people, you know, they're out here doing it, moving, and they're in the cars, you know, get your audio book or whatever. But definitely appreciate you inviting me onto the show and being a part of this.
I'm so excited you're here. This was so fun. So next week, Jay and I are going to talk about Ta-Nehisi Coates' book, Between the World and Me.
Hey.
If you haven't read it yet, it's only 150 pages, so you could probably read it in a few days if you made some time. A week is definitely time if you can make it. If not, you can listen to it on Audible. Go to audibletrial.com/thestacks, and he narrates it.
Yeah.
Which you guys know is my favorite kind of audiobook. So check that book out. We'll be back next week to talk about it. Everything we talked about today will be in the show notes. All of Jay's social and all that will also be in the show notes, and I will link to some episodes of his podcast as well. So everything you need is there for you. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see y'all in the stacks. That does it for us this week on The Stacks. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to Jay Connor for being our guest this week. Jay will be back next week to discuss Ta-Nehisi Coates' book, Between the World and Me. Don't forget, we are still doing our Patreon giveaway. It goes until August 16th. Go to patreon.com/thestacks, contribute whatever you can, and be entered to win one of three The Stacks totes. We're grateful for anything you can contribute and appreciate all the help and support from our listeners. Please make sure you're subscribed to the show wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're listening through Apple Podcasts, please rate and review the show. Our theme music comes from Tagirigis. Robin McCrite is our graphic designer. And this show was created and produced by me, Tracy Thomas.